Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Logistics Management Podcast Series. My name is Jeff Berman. I'm Group News Editor for Logistics Management Magazine and the Peerless Media Supply Chain Group. Today, it's a real pleasure to once again welcome back Ian Jeffries to the podcast. Ian serves as President and CEO of the Association of American Railroads based in Washington, D.C. Ian started in his role leading the AAR in January of 2019, and prior to that, he served as a Senior Vice President of AAR's Government Affairs, where he oversaw the development, promotion, and implementation of legislative priorities for the AAR. And prior to joining the AAR, Ian served as a Senior Policy Advisor to the Chairman of the U.S. Senate Committee on Commerce, Science, and Transportation from 2009 to 2013. Ian, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Jeff. It's great to join you again.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot has been going on, clearly, since the last time we spoke and we had you on one of our podcasts, which I believe, if I'm not mistaken, was back in November. But I think a good place to start, just to kick off our talk today, Ian, would be sort of the rails. How would you sort of view the rails, the freight rails specifically, the response to the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic? Obviously, there's a lot of moving parts. The rails have always been known for being really efficient in terms of staffing and throughput and things like that. So sort of with that as a sort of a segue, how are things sort of looking at the moment when we view the intersection of freight rail and the COVID-19 response to it?
Certainly. And that's a great question with a lot of different parts to an answer.
Take your time.
Yeah. As we look back on 2020, it's hard to believe that this time last year, you know, I think we were hearing kind of the beginnings of the story of COVID-19. And I don't think any of us anticipated what was in store, which has been, you know, a truly immensely challenging and many times over tragic situation that we've been dealing with and continue to deal with in this country.
Of course.
When it comes to freight rail's response, I could not be prouder of the way our industry and our employees stepped up. Our employees, quite frankly, deserve the lion's share of the credit. We have an employee base that, as you know, is used to adhering to extremely strict safety protocols day in and day out. Railroading is an outdoor business. It's a heavy industrial business. So there's inherent risk to the work the men and women of the railroads do. But every day they come to work with the singular focus of safety and doing the job as safe as possible and making sure that all employees get home to their families safe and sound every evening. And so with the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic, the railroads implemented a number of risk reduction measures that would allow our employees to continue to do their jobs as safe as possible. So that includes policies in place that enable social distancing in the workplace, pervasive use of PPE, sanitization requirements, other steps as well. And, you know, I'm pleased to say that the industry has been able to navigate the pandemic in a way. We're certainly not without our cases. As with every other industry, we've certainly had cases in our industry, but we've been able to manage that caseload in a manner that has allowed the railroads to continue to run. Our industry is one where working from home is not an option. We have customers and communities that rely on us all over the country to deliver goods 24/7, and railroads were able to do that throughout the pandemic. And we were able to do so. I'm pleased to say that we were able to do so without any sort of bailout from the federal government. Our companies were well capitalized, and I always say that we're built for the long term, and we're resilient and able to absorb hits like we've seen in the past year. And when you look at the traffic side of things, railroads certainly got hit hard last spring. We were at our trough, probably about just around 30% off of prior year's volumes across the board. So a pretty significant hit. But what we saw in mid-summer and certainly into the fall was
was a pretty strong resurgence in traffic snapping back, probably not something that anyone fully expected. Intermodal really picked up pace and has continued on strong with some of the strongest months in the history of the industry here as we closed out 2020. And another bright spot, of course, was the agricultural markets and grain specifically. Grain has been going gangbusters. It really stayed reasonably strong throughout the year, but really in the past, again, few months, we've had levels not seen since the Clinton administration. So we're talking 20 years since we were at some of these levels. So other areas continue to struggle along. When you look, of course, at the auto industry, the plants shut down for several weeks in the spring. So that ground all auto movements to a halt. But those have come back fairly strong and moving full speed ahead. So right now, you know, the industry, as we started out 2021, you compare that back to a year ago, we're above where we were a year ago. So the positive trends have continued into the beginning of 2021. And I think our industry is cautiously optimistic for how the year will go. I don't think anyone expects totally smooth sailing. We're still in the depths of a pandemic and need to dedicate ourselves to getting out of that. But by and large, rail performed strong and our employees performed admirably and continues to do so.
Yeah, no, absolutely. As you had mentioned about the intermodal tallies on a monthly and weekly basis, especially over the second half of 2020, it was really hard to overlook just how strong those numbers were. Obviously, probably a heavy majority of that could be viewed as pandemic driven. And we saw the same thing at the ports too, especially the West Coast ports.
Right.
I thought it was pretty interesting when the AAR recently issued its release for full year 2020 volumes. It was something that your senior vice president, John Gray, said. He said something along in relation to the railroads in terms of, it was something like this, the experience in 2020, along with huge ongoing network investments, had made the industry more adaptable and better able to adjust to the demands of a wide range of operational and market conditions, adding that railroads are well prepared to help our economy grow in 2021. There's really nothing not to agree with that. And, you know, I think John Gray was spot on to be sure. And I know we're really in the early innings, with sort of on the home stretch of January here, but how would you sort of view what we're seeing volume wise year to date, just in the first 20 something days of 2021?
Certainly. So we're continuing to see strong intermodal. If you look at year to date versus, you know, let's say January of 2021 to January 2020, intermodal is about 11% higher than it was this time last year. So that's continuing strong. Overall traffic's just south of 5% higher. Carloads are just off where we were last year, but the grain volumes continue to really move at a remarkable clip. We're continuing that positive trend that we saw in the fall into January here. And tomorrow we'll, of course, release our weekly rail traffic for last week's rail traffic. So we'll see what that holds in store. But I'm optimistic that the positive trends will continue.
Okay, great. Let's shift gears over to the new administration and Congress, Ian, in terms of what could be in store. And I know that you recently wrote an article which appeared in The Hill on January 8th. And, you know, there was one part, you know, it was all very interesting, but you really set the table nicely. And I just wanted to kind of restate what was written there. You had said that one of Mr. Biden's greatest passions, the U.S. rail industry, is uniquely positioned to help meet tomorrow's challenges by recognizing the clear resiliency of the privately funded rail network and embracing measures to encourage railroads' competitiveness in delivering goods and people. Railroads can help lawmakers secure policy wins in 2021 to benefit America. So why don't we just sort of jump off with that as a theme, in some of the ways in which the railroads can be proactive and help secure those policy wins, if you will.
Certainly. And just to underscore that, you know, the President Biden has made it clear that not only rail is a focus of his, but infrastructure writ large is a focus. Secretary designee, Mayor Buttigieg, reiterated that point during his confirmation hearing last week. I'm looking forward to sitting down with the DOT secretary when confirmed. I think there's a lot of opportunity there. And so let me just hit on a few points. So first and foremost, you know, infrastructure might be the most overused word in Washington over the past few years. And of course, the devil's always in the details there. And you know, the number one challenge is how do we fund infrastructure? Well, Jeff, as you know, and I think probably most of your listeners know, freight railroads, we invest our own money back into our networks. We're almost exclusively privately funded, and we're talking roughly $26 billion annually going back into the network. So that's, you know, that's $1 billion every other week going back into the rail network. You mentioned John Gray's point about the health of the network and the resiliency of the network throughout the pandemic. Well, that's directly a result of all of that investment. So railroads, one, when we talk about infrastructure, you know, we're not seeking a lot of federal money. Of course, there are programs that we're supportive of. We're supportive of some of the discretionary grant programs that provide funding to some of our public partners for public-private partnerships. The CREATE program in Chicago comes to mind. That's kind of a model program that has allowed rail and public sectors to work together to do a lot of good things. But while we don't seek a lot of federal dollars directly, we certainly support a broader infrastructure program. We need an integrated infrastructure network that functions well and functions at a high level. So we're talking about ports, we're talking about highways, we're talking about broadband, because that's how the supply chain works. As you know, no one operates in a vacuum. It's all integrated. And so we need our partners in the supply chain to be functioning at a high level as well. Of course, we want that to be paid for. We want the highways to be paid for by the users. And if you've been tracking this at all, you know, that's anything but the case recently. We've seen hundreds of billions of dollars, approximately $140 billion, that is, going into the Highway Trust Fund from the general fund. So we need to get back to a more sustainable user pays network. But so when we sit down, we look at the administration's goals. You know, we know there's going to be a push on addressing climate change and taking steps to reduce the effects of climate change and other environmental efforts. We think rail has an absolutely critical role to play there. When you look at the reduced emissions of moving goods by rail, when you look at the positive impacts on highway congestion when you move things by rail, we think rail. When you look at the fuel consumption when you move things by rail, or the lack thereof, we for years and years and years we've used the number. I think it's about 480 miles. You can move 1 ton of freight on 1 gallon of diesel around 480 miles when you go by rail. So that fuel efficiency is huge. It results in less emissions being emitted into the atmosphere. So we think we can be very helpful seeking solutions with the Biden administration on their climate goals. We think, as I mentioned, on the infrastructure front, just writ large, we can be a valuable partner there. Our key argument on infrastructure is let's focus on sensible funding. Let's not get divisive policies in the way and allow that to undermine and drag down any sort of infrastructure effort. And what we're talking about there is operational restrictions and other hindering measures that really reduce rail's ability to operate efficiently at a high level and compete for traffic. Our railroads have done a really good job of shrinking that mileage where they are competitive with truck traffic. You know, I think the traditional number used to be about 500 miles. It had to be at least 500 miles for rail to compete with truck. We're seeing that number shrink on a consistent basis. Rail can compete with truck at a shorter and shorter distance, and I expect that number to continue to fall. But we need sensible policy measures that allow that to continue and allow us to continue to compete and operate efficiently. So there's a lot to work on. There's a lot of great opportunities there. The administration is moving quickly to get folks into key posts that we work with. And I'm looking forward, as I said, to sitting down with the secretary when he's confirmed and of course, his team, because I think there's a lot of common ground there.
Yeah, that's terrific. Based on some of the reports that have been out there, it seems like we're going to get some sort of clarity on what what the bones of a new infrastructure bill could look like. So that's going to be definitely worth following and see what happens. Just before we wrap up here, Ian, how about we shift gears over to the Surface Transportation Board? I noted now they're finally at five full members following the November Senate confirmations of Michelle Schultz and Robert Primus. And in terms of the STB's focus on economic regulation for the freight rail sector, where do things sort of stand? What should industry stakeholders be focusing on, keeping an eye on, if you will?
Yeah, absolutely. So you're exactly right. There's been a lot of activity going on at the board recently, with new members being sworn in, and just last week a new chairman being named by President Biden. So we have a new chairman, Marty Oberman from Chicago, who's been on the board just around 2 years now. So railroads look at everything the STB does through the lens of, we need to earn the revenues necessary to make the investments to meet today's and tomorrow's demands. So everything we deal with over at the board is through that lens. And the board has made it quite clear, at least Chair Begeman made it quite clear, that her interest was really making the board function more efficiently, making the rate case process function a little more efficiently, a little more compressed timelines. And certainly there's always opportunity to evaluate how to make an agency run better and how to make your processes function better so that they're usable by all. Our key tenet, though, is, you know, we can take a look at rate case methodology, but rate cases need to be grounded in sound economic principles, need to be grounded in transparent data, and really need to be grounded in strong standards. And so that's how our approach with any sort of rate case methodology adjustments that the board may consider. But, you know, I think the board and the industry have worked well this year, this past year, throughout the pandemic. Communication has been very strong back and forth. The board did come out with a statement reiterating the need for railroads to operate throughout communities in the U.S. to move the goods necessary that communities and customers rely on. So that was helpful. I believe that was last June. And so, look, it's a new board. We have new members, as you said, and we're just starting the process of engaging with those new members. There's a lot of education that'll need to occur. Chairman Oberman is getting settled in. He's been chair for not even a week yet, so
yeah,
he'll start establishing his agenda. But there's a lot of common ground there, and there's a lot of opportunity to do good things with the board. Chairman Oberman, you know, he's a Chicago native. He was chair of Metra in Chicago. He was a longtime alderman in Chicago. So he certainly understands the vital role that rail plays, not only in Chicago, but throughout the country. He understands the capital intensity of the rail industry. You can't railroad on the cheap if you're going to do it well and if you're going to do it safely. So, you know, knowing that he has a full awareness of that is helpful on my end. But We'll certainly engage on every issue and look to make sure that the board members are fully educated on our views and the data that supports our views.
All right, that's terrific. I think that's a good place for us to wrap up for today, Ian. On behalf of Logistics Management Magazine and the Peerless Media Supply Chain Group, I'd really like to offer up a big thank you for joining us again today. I believe this is the third time we've had you on our podcast series.
Yeah, I think you're right. Becoming a regular.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we definitely look forward to more visits in the future. And for those of you in the audience that are on Twitter, please feel free to give AAR, the Association of American Railroads, a follow. And that's simply at @AAR_FreightRail. And also, please feel free to give us at Logistics Management a follow. And that's simply at LogisticsMGMT. So, Ian, we'll talk to you next time. Thanks again.
Thanks, Jeff. It's always a pleasure chatting with you.
Absolutely. Same to you. And thanks to everyone else. Thanks for tuning into our podcast, and we look forward to seeing you next time. Have a great day, everybody.